good afternoon, and welcome to the Daily Commute here on KDOV. It's 5 minutes after 4 o'clock on a Thursday. Not just any old Thursday, but the final Thursday of the month, and that is the Thursday that we are joined by our two fine church history pals. They are Matt McAuliffe and Chris White here on the Daily Commute, and I hope that you have been enjoying these series. As we've talked about Augustine of Hippo, we've talked about the Crusades, we've talked about a lot of other interesting, we talked about Martin Luther, and today we're going to be speaking about something entirely different, something that has always been kind of confusing to me. It is the Spanish Inquisition.
Love that introduction.
We found that for you guys.
Oh, we're so pleased, Pat.
That's fabulous. We like that.
Yeah, well,
start this program with some class. That's what I always say.
May have to interject that again a time or two here.
Absolutely. Well, okay. You know, it is funny because that is exactly the picture we all have of the Spanish Inquisition.
I mean, it's the most horrible thing that
it's a red
that's
button.
Right.
It's a red button for everybody. And it was fun, because in reading up on this, that's one of the delights of this program, is we get to do the research, and we discover all kinds of bizarre and arcane things. One of them is that the image that the Spanish Inquisition has is really not very accurate in a lot of aspects. Well, before I get ahead of myself, let's paint the background.
I always have these Vincent Price movies in mind, you know, and there's these horrible things swinging closer and closer, and just the mere anticipation of
my goodness.
Funny, you know, pain and suffering and torture
chambers. The red hot coals, you know, the pokers and all that.
A number of years ago,
I did a class out at our church called the Reformation Overview, and it had a whole series of Christian films of different people that were John Wycliffe and John Huss and these guys. And one of the things that always struck me was in all the movies, there was always a scene in the torture chamber, and I thought, what is this? Why, you know, is this standard equipment, you know, in Europe for a church to have a torture chamber down in its basement? Now, anybody who's ever taught Sunday school class knows that almost every church should have a torture chamber of some kind.
Well, at least there was a reason for that, and we'll probably get to that at some point. But just for fun, just so the folks have an idea of what we're looking at here, this is like Europe in the 12th century. Basically, Europe equals the Holy Roman Empire. And it's really critical that we all remember that, because what that means, heresy is not like disagreeing with heresy basically equaled treason. And that's why the church was so quick to land on it. So, I mean, that's just one of the things that we need to keep in mind when we're talking about it. Now, here's something interesting. In the peninsula that we know now as Spain, basically, you had three cultures living together, unlike anywhere else on the planet. You had the largest community of Jews on the continent, about 100,000 Jews. You had a huge contingent of Muslims from the old Islamic sweep days since 700.
And these are the people that we know as the Moorish people, or the Moors.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever wonder, you know, who the Moors were, they were the people living in the south of Spain.
And actually gave Spain, you know, the quality of music it has, some of the skin tone, some language.
And architecture is just fantastic.
Boy, we could go on and on.
There is a rich cultural heritage there.
It was completely unique. Yeah. It was completely unique to have these three cultures. Now, they weren't, I won't say complete harmony. There were problems, but no place else was it even remotely duplicated. Now, slowly they were winning the Spanish peninsula back from the Muslims, but it was happening slowly enough that it wasn't developing a lot of tension.
Who was winning the continent?
The Christians, if you will.
So the Jews, the Muslims, the Christians, all occupying the same...
The Iberian Peninsula. The Iberian Peninsula, what we call Spain today.
And then came the middle of the 12th century, the Black Death. Yes.
Mm. The Black Death.
This killed off about a third of the population of Europe within just a couple of years. It was a nightmare. I mean, it created a cultural schizophrenia, if you will. And guess who the scapegoats were that took the blame?
It's happened once before.
Oh, come on.
The Jewish people. They became the scapegoats over the Black Death.
Oh, my. In almost every country in Europe. And the Spanish Peninsula, which wasn't Spain yet. It was a collection of small kingdoms. Same thing happened here. In 1391, riots just swept across the peninsula, and it's been estimated as high as 50,000 Jews were killed. Now, that's a little exaggerated.
It's horrible.
Oh, beyond horrible. We're thinking more realistic figures is several thousand, and the reason this is important, it sets the stage because the Jews that weren't killed were offered the opportunity to convert to Christianity, and a lot of them did. If given the choice, and they became known as the conversos.
Ah,
okay.
This is critical.
Okay.
Remember, we won't use a lot of foreign terms, but conversos is critical because many generations later, the conversos had actually become good, solid Bible-believing Christians. They were in positions of influence and wealth and helped run the government.
They became really integrated into
the
whole Spanish society.
Became Christians. They were Christians. Yeah.
Okay, so who was enforcing this conversion then? I mean, 50,000 or some thousand anyway, Jews were killed, and then...
Mobs, the church. It was one of those things when they get swept up, the mob rule. It's hard to point out one guy or one agency that's in charge. It's the thing to do. I know. Let's go down and burn out the Jewish
kill some Jew
town. Yeah,
sure. And Spain was not really altogether. They had not really coaled out of different little kingdoms at that time as well.
As a matter of fact, that leads us into the next thing. Here, let's move forward. Not quite 100 years. The time's about 1475. And what happens is a couple of royal youngsters, the prince of one little kingdom and the princess of another little kingdom, get together and get married, and that creates a big hullabaloo, and after a couple of years, they emerge as King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella.
Who we all know from grade school.
Columbus fame.
That's right.
Absolutely. And that they are exactly the same people, and basically their coming together creates what we know now as Spain for the first time ever. And... So now get in your mind, here's this picture. We're slowly taking the peninsula away from the Muslims. We now have created for the first time a new nation, and we have two young, strong people, extremely bright, very pious, very believing, very sincere, and things start to take off from there.
And they were, one of the things I think that is very important as far as the background of the Spanish Inquisition as well as that, the whole idea of consolidation of power, wouldn't you say, Matthew,
was a
very important factor in the Spanish Inquisition because they were trying to bring people together and also being a new nation, they were needing cash. There was a lot of different factors playing into this, but Ferdinand and Isabella actually approached the Pope and said, you know, other countries around Europe, and that's something else that a lot of people don't understand, is the Inquisition did not just happen in Spain.
Okay.
Actually, the Inquisition was happening all over Europe. It was a regular thing, and actually, Ferdinand and Isabella had put in a request to the Pope to see if they could have a board of Inquisition brought to Spain. It was actually kind of a later development.
So there really were torture chambers in the basements of monasteries, is that right?
Not in monasteries. What they ended up doing, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, but basically where the Inquisition went to a town, they could choose wherever they wanted to set up shop. They almost always chose the local castle, which almost always had a nice dungeon underneath.
I mean, what's a castle without a dungeon?
Yeah. I mean, hey.
Hey, you know, it's just, you know, B-flat castle. Who cares about it?
Well, that's right.
So what we got going on here is an incredibly passionate young king who firmly believes he's accomplishing God's will by chasing out the Muslims and eradicating the Jews. And what they're really looking for are the people who are calling themselves Christians but are still secretly practicing Jewish rites. And that's the key. That's what they play on the fears of all the people. You know, they accusing them of the same things they accused the Christians of in the old Roman days. You know, a cannibalism, you know, baby sacrifices.
Disloyalty.
Off-the-wall stuff.
They can't be trusted. And
the fact that the conversos were rich and influential and had a lot of stuff.
And that people convicted, of course, would have their wealth and their property confiscated.
All of this combined against them.
Yes, but you know, there was also another group besides the conversos. There were the Marranos, and these were people that were absolute. The conversos, a lot of them were very sincere converts. Where the Marranos, they were ones who were Jews that had made an outward conversion, but actually were incredibly insincere, and were practicing their Judaism behind everybody's back. And
so there was a problem. I mean, they didn't make this up out of thin air.
Well, at least there was a problem if you don't believe in religious plurality.
Yes, and okay. They did not.
So we got the Conversos and the Muranos, and it was their goal to purify the landscape.
Absolutely.
Right?
And
it's funny, Pat.
Thought they were doing God a favor.
They really did. Gosh, is it John 14:1 where the
time will come when people will put you to death and think they're doing
God a favor.
God a favor.
Boy,
this is
there. No better picture of that than this happening right here.
It's about John 16:1.
Oh, you bet you're right. You're right. Well, this was interesting because they really didn't, the people that claimed to be Jews, they didn't really bother. And the people that were Muslims, they just sent an army against them. To Granada in the south of Spain was the last town or territory, and they just laid siege to it for 12 years. But the Jews that became Christians, the conversos, were the ones, and they're three generations down. If your great-great-grandfather was a Jew and converted, that made you a suspect. And so they invited the Inquisition in, and it was different because it had loyalty only to Ferdinand and Isabella. It did not answer to the Pope. Hmm. And as soon as the Pope realized what he'd done, created a Frankenstein's monster.
He tried to intervene, but it was too wildly popular.
So, I mean, the Ferdinand and Isabella they asked for the Pope's permission to get the Inquisition,
yes.
Which
he says
there
okay.
were several roving bands of, one up in Switzerland here, mm-hmm. and we'll send one down over to... Okay.
Well, they got permission, and they did kind of a franchise thing, and they made their
own. Invented their own, and that's where they appointed the Dominican friar, Tomas is it Torquemada?
Torquemada.
Torquemada. And an interesting thing, too, about Torquemada is the fact that either his grandmother or his grandfather was a converso. So he sort of had a skeleton in his closet.
Isn't that the way of it, though?
But, you know, he was kind of almost what I would liken to he had kind of the wrath of a reformed smoker.
Yeah.
You know, how he knew he could tell because he came from that background. So he could spot, you know, what he considered an insincere Jewish convert.
Yeah, he wasn't necessarily a cruel man. He just, what he had was zeal with no love, no compassion. He wanted to purify the temple, and he didn't care who he had to hurt to do it, now, which was pretty interesting. You know, just for fun, if we see Torquemada is the Inquisitor General. Under him was a high council of the Inquisition. It's about six bishops. Mm-hmm. Under them, each city had a tribunal, which was a board of two or three lawyer, theologian types, and there were a couple roving tribunals.
Sounds so scary.
Oh, it's... And under each tribunal is anywhere from 100 to 1,000 people called familiars, which when it started out, they were just lackeys, clerks. They were informers. They would hold forth evidence. And it started out to be kind of an honor to be a familiar. But after a while, it took on the tone that it has today, and we see these slimy little rat-fink, slinking around informing on people. So that was the structure of it, and as Chris pointed out, they financed themselves. What they would do is they would go into a town, and they would go to the big church, and they would read an edict of grace. That is, if you come in the next 30 or 40 days and confess your sins, and we know they must be many, we won't take any action against you, and then they just sit back. And it was like a hole in the dam. You know, one little one would start, and somebody would come in, and they'd confess all their sins, and of course they'd confess their neighbor's sins. And so pretty soon people get scared. Well, I wonder if he confessed my sin. I better get in there. And pretty soon they had so many confessions and so many sins. Really, they didn't need to torture anybody.
Yeah. It's sort of like developing your prospect list. kind of a pyramid scheme, you know, but you'd get, you'd get plenty of clients. And then they would have, people that would make, you would become accused, and you'd enter into that status where they would come and if you'd been accused or named, they'd come pick you up and haul you in.
Well, actually, they would even sometimes, if you were rich, would give you a little, you'd be accused, but you'd have a couple days. They'd just let you know you were accused. And the idea is that if you're really rich, you split. You go to Portugal or Italy, and you leave your $6 billion mansion behind.
They didn't have ATMs in those days, so you couldn't take your money out, you know.
Yeah,
which the Inquisition was only too happy to take off your hands, by the way.
You know, they were even into, and not above, trying dead people as heretics. If they knew that you were dead and that you were wealthy, someone would arrange for your accusation so that you could be tried as a heretic. And then, of course, the wealth would be taken away from your descendants
mm-hmm.
and all state coffers. But, you know, when you're starting a new country, you need cash flow. And so it was kind of a, you know, it was kind of a real black spot, I guess.
Hence the trip west by Cristoforo Colombo, huh?
Boy.
Well, the money had to come from somewhere.
It wasn't Isabella's jewels.
Yeah.
Okay. This is all very fascinating. So we have the familiars roaming. That sounds like, you know, the SS here. And just, hey, there's one over there.
Yeah, you know, it really was. Now, a lot of this was standard practice, though, in Europe. A little bit later, we'll talk about why did the Inquisition get singled out, you know, and really, where did we get that image that we have when it was really common practice everywhere to do things this way? We'll talk about that in a minute. One of the really unique things about the Inquisition, though, Pat, was it was extremely powerful because it answered to no one except the king. And he was just tickled to death to have somebody out making him money, taking care of the unpopular elements that might destabilize his growing young Spain. And so the king was just happy as a clam. He just gave him free hand. And actually, they were better policing, self-policing than you might think. That when things got carried away in a couple districts, the high council actually went and said, hey, you guys cool off, cool your jets, you're confiscating a few too many estates here.
And they did put some limits on the torture in the interrogation as well.
Yeah, they weren't allowed to make you bleed, they weren't allowed to break your bones.
I think they could only torture you one time. So they,
although
was
they
once
would
a day?
Stretch it out. Yes.
Yeah, was it one time or once a day?
Well, it became a fiction. Because what they said is, we'll take a break from the torture now. And they could come back in a week and continue the torture.
So you'd be tortured once, but they could drag it out for a week or a week or two.
But, you know, the funny thing is, that was very time-consuming and very expensive. Took a lot of staff, trained, skilled technicians. So torture was not used very often at all.
So what was the point of the torture? How did you wind up in the dreaded torture chamber?
Well, remember that you know, we look at this from our perspective today and we go, you know, wow, that's, you know, that's really weird that, you know, we're having torture chambers and all that. But that was actually a standard practice in the European old world justice system that, you know, it was just kind of part and parcel with interrogating a possible witness. Was you'd or accused person was to bring in an element of torture, and this was practiced all over Europe, and it's part of that whole idea and philosophy that someone who is accused of a crime is guilty until proven innocent.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be here.
Yeah, if you weren't guilty, you wouldn't be here, and and so of course that does a little bit of violence to our mindset because we have just the opposite: you're innocent until proven guilty. But that was a fairly standard practice, so how do you end up or bring in a torture chamber? Well, that was just how we did things back in those days.
But how did the individual, okay, now that we're set up, and now how did the individual wind up in that?
What made it difficult is the secrecy involved, and that was one of the things that did make the Inquisition unique. They often would simply tell you were accused, but you had no idea of what. They would withhold the identity of the witnesses against you. Mm-hmm. So you really had, well, is this because I kicked the cat last week? Or is this because I dropped my Bible Tuesday? Or you had no idea.
I saw what you did.
Yeah.
I know what you did, and I saw it. But, you know, one of the things they did do when someone was accused is you would be able to make a list of your enemies. And they would receive the list of your enemies, and they generally would not take their testimony.
Uh-huh.
So at least you had that going. If, you know, if someone was your known enemy, they were not allowed to be a...
It's surprising. Yeah, there's several little places where they're very reasonable. If some of the evidence was poor or was shown to be false, they'd drop the charges. Okay, go home, sorry.
Well, at least that's bright. And I'm thinking as you're talking here about the legal reforms that did take place a little bit later on,
mm-hmm.
and some of those reforms that we now enjoy. I mean, they really were. They had to be new sometime. you know, a trial by jury and those whole kind of things, you know.
You know, I'm sure you're right, Pat. I'm sure that's what the founding fathers were thinking of, is exactly this, because that was still very fresh in their minds.
And very much a part of the old world justice system.
Didn't we have the stocks, and didn't we have the pillories, and didn't we have the public ridicule
and
those kind of things? Mm-hmm. And we even had a few witch trials, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just my normal lifestyle.
Well, you know, the whole purpose of it was to bring the offender to reconciliation with the church. And they would hopefully get a confession. And that's where the torture came in, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. If you were really stubborn and the evidence was substantial against you, you could go to the stake. And it was the heretics that had come before the Inquisition once before and recanted and then come again. They were the ones that, even if they confessed, they were going to burn, or the ones that said that refused to confess. And those were the two that normally burned. And 95% of them were of Converso stock in the early part of the... Basically, when we say Spanish Inquisition, we're looking at 1480 to 1530. I mean, that's really the classic time when all the horrible images in our mind, that's what that characterizes. It actually lasted until when, Christopher? When did
all the way to 1830 was when the Spanish government finally did a edict of suppression and put an end to it.
I think it turned away from the Jews and did the Protestants there for a while in the middle of the 16th century. Before it was done, it took care of commercial competitors, French immigrants that didn't have their papers right. That was one of the things that made it so popular with the government. Here's this totally authoritative body that does what it wants, goes where it wants, and it takes care of the unpopular, messy aspects of my population. So we're not getting rid of it.
And does put a little bit of money in the coffers.
Yeah, it does, by golly. Mm. Very interesting stuff.
Most people, though, that were brought to trial, that were brought in for the Inquisition, their main form of punishment was not death, but was public humiliation.
Yeah.
And they would oftentimes be strutted through town partially naked, things that were very embarrassing to them, and they would have to kiss the cross and confess before the public that they were sinners and Herod repented. And
dunce caps.
Generally it was that, not the death. But in a few thousand circumstances anyway, it was definitely being burned at the stake.
Well, that's the surprising part, is we tend to think of this as thousands and hundreds of thousands of people going to the stake. And actually, in that 50 years of the Inquisition at its prime, not more than about 2,000 were burned. Now, many thousands were dislocated and deprived of their property. It wasn't a good time or a good thing, but set against the backdrop of the rest of Europe, it wasn't that bad at all. I mean, golly, St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre 50 years later in Paris, 20,000 were killed in one day. And lest we think that this was strictly Catholics getting on the Protestants, I need to say that the Protestant Queen Elizabeth and Oliver Cromwell butchered many a thousand of Catholic
and
in Ireland.
It depended which monarch was on the throne as to were we burning the Catholics or the Protestants.
That's
and that
right.
went forth, back and forth, even in, as you say, Shakespeare's time. You know?
Well, and in the 20th century... Between Stalin, Hitler, Pol Pot, and those guys, what did we figure out?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's in the
50 million?
At least 50 million would be a conservative estimate of people that have been, you know, through ethnic cleansing.
In the name of ethnic cleansing.
You know, which is pretty much, you know, so it's not like we've really, evolved and have really moved up the moral food chain here.
Gosh.
Any in our own particular era here, but... You know, one of the things that, just to kind of put some things together in history, one of the key years, of course, that
we all know
of is the year 1492, the year that Columbus sailed the ocean blue. And one of the things that is interesting about Columbus is the fact that, of course, we know he went to King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella and got the financing for the journey in the New World. But a couple things of perspective on that, one of which was that Spain was really a brand new country. And here they were working on really reconquering real estate in their own land, but were already, in such a short period of time, in less than two decades, were also beginning to build their world empire. And that required a lot of money. And they also received a lot of money from the New World as well, coming back in the form of wealth and goods and gold and all that kind of thing. But also, a lot of, in that same year, in 1492, was also the year that King Ferdinand decided to do an expulsion of all Jewish people from the Kingdom of Spain. And a lot of Christopher Columbus's crew members on the Niña Pinta and Santa Maria were Jews that had been expelled. Yes.
How about
And they were on the boat with Christopher Columbus. And a couple of years ago, I was in the city of Santo Domingo, which is the Dominican Republic, and is where Christopher Columbus is buried. And there was quite an extensive exhibit. There's a museum dedicated to him there right around his mausoleum. And there was actually some implications that Christopher Columbus may have actually had Jewish blood in his background because of his relationship with the shipping trade. Now, we don't know how true that is, but there was implication that even he might have been somehow or another tied in.
Well, it gets pretty interrelated, doesn't it?
How about that? Yeah. So, okay, the crew, but maybe even the captain himself, huh?
Well, not only were the Jews expelled, but also the last Moorish Muslim town, Granada, fell to the siege in 1492.
Wow.
The last thing that happened in 1492 was Alexander VI came to the papacy. He became pope. Before he was pope, his name was Rodrigo Borgia. If that's any giveaway.
Okay.
The slimiest, no-goodest pope that we ever had. By golly, that was him. And it was just a year to remember. The Torquemada was going full blast, and it was, if you had to take a snapshot of the Inquisition of the time, 1492 was it. Because it catapulted Spain into what later became known in their history as the Golden Century. You know, they, within 100 years, they went from nothing to a global empire, earth-girdling monstrosity. It was huge, and it was because of the single-minded, obsessive pursuit of unity, national unity, on Ferdinand's part. It was really interesting. Mm-hmm. By that time, the Inquisition was such an institution, they couldn't even get rid of it if they wanted to. It even got defensive about it. If you were a Spanish person, you could complain, and a lot of people did. As a matter of fact, some towns hardly were touched by the Inquisition because they wouldn't cooperate. If the people didn't cave in to fear and nobody confessed, the Inquisition had nothing to do. They'd just pack up their tents and walk away.
Move on. You know, another thing, Matthew, that is very much true about the Spanish Inquisition in the very realist, basic form, it truly is what we would call ethnic cleansing.
Oh, yeah.
Because they had what they called, in their aristocracy, the cult of sangre de limpio, pure blood. That's Spanish for pure blood. And that was a big thing with them, was establishing, being pure white Christian blood. And the irony, of course...
Complete fiction.
Yeah, the irony, of course, is the fact that, you know, the Jews and the Muslims and the Christians had lived there for so long and there were so many intermarriages that, you know, it really was nothing but a piece of fiction. But part of this whole focus on having, quote-unquote, pure blood was a big deal and very much part and parcel mm-hmm. with the Spanish Inquisition.
So
and thus, it's very similar to what we see today, you know, that's happened in the Balkans and elsewhere.
So we're stuck wanting to explain how on earth did this relatively mild, compared to everything else, religious institution, and it did kill a couple thousand people, and it was responsible for a lot of suffering, but why was it singled out? How did it become the earth-shaking symbol of terror?
The byword.
Yeah,
that's right. Some sort of Inquisition?
Well, here is our theory. One, the time, the Reformation time, that 100 years, was the peak of hostility between Catholic and Protestant, and created, bad feelings that are still around between some denominations even today. And it coincided with the printing press. So instead of these hot emotions dying down, as they did with every other big conflict in history, suddenly they were preserved for posterity forever in posters and articles and books. And by golly, it really became a byword in Europe, the Spanish Inquisition.
Indeed, also, secular historians, not Christian historians, but secular historians talk about a body of legends and hearsay called the Black Legends. And they're all related to Spain and all related to Roman Catholicism and related to the Spanish Inquisition. And where a lot of people believe these came from is basically from England And what they were designed to do was to build up in the eyes of the English white Protestantism. And what they did was they made Spanish people look more sinister and lower in evil. And so there was kind of a mythology and an exaggeration.
Like the Japanese in World War II.
Very much so. And then, of course, you had other authors, such as Dostoevsky in his book, The Grand Inquisitor, which was a popular